The following is a lecture entitled Peace in Adversity, Part 1, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasat Hikari, recorded on January 13th, 2018, in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada.
So, peace in adversity. Well, we certainly have the adversity, don't we? So therefore there's a need for peace. If we don't have any adversity, we don't have to worry about it. But since we have so much adversity, we have to find out how we can have peace in the adversity. This material world is the world of adversity. We can even call it adversity loka. Here in adversity loka, we need to have peace. There's so many agitations. Prabhupada explains there's threefold miseries. Adiatmik, adibhautik, adidaivik. Miseries of the mind and body, adiatmik, misery caused by other living beings, adibhautik, miseries caused by the demigods or by natural influences, adidaivik. Prabhupada explains we're always being pinched by at least one of these miseries, if not all three. So the point is we're always being attacked by miseries at every minute in material life. That's a fact. You can't deny it. At every minute, something is there to agitate us. Every minute, something is always there. Therefore, to find the way out of that is a very valuable thing. Very, very valuable thing. And this is what Krishna consciousness does. It enables you to find peace in the midst of all of these problems, all these adversities. There's a special verse, it's the peace formula verse. 529 Gita Bhaktaram Jagatapasam Sarvaloka Maheshvaram Suhridam Sarvabhutanam Gyatvanam Chandramitstati. One who knows me is the supreme owner, the supreme enjoyer, and Suhridam, the best friend of all living entities, enjoys perfect peace within himself. So it's a really simple thing. Why we don't have the peace right now? Because we don't acknowledge these things. We think, I'm the owner. Just like I give an example, there's a little kid, right? He's got his toys, and the other kid comes from next door to play with it, you know, two kids playing together. And the kid from next door looks at this, the kid's toys, and the kid goes, mine, isn't it? Even a little child has this false sense of proprietorship. We come naked, we go naked, but in the middle we say, mine. It's only slipping through our hands. How we can claim to be the owners of it? But yet we do that. Even as little children we do that. As we get bigger, our sense of proprietorship becomes even bigger, you see. My house, my country. On the national level too, this is Canada. You can't come here unless we authorize you to enter. Because this is our country. We own this place. It's the same mentality as a little kid with the toys. Expanded to the national level, you see. So this is the first thing, you see. We are trying to be the proprietors when actually we're not. We have so much disturbance of mind because we're trying to be the proprietors. And who is the rightful owner? I mean, who is the rightful enjoyer? The owner. Well, how does that apply? Just like, well, you go out to the parking lot and you see that some stranger is driving, is just taking off driving your car. You feel good about that? He wants to enjoy your car. Well, wait a minute, that's my car. I'm the one who enjoys it. Nobody else can come and drive away with my car. I call the police. A thief, you see. One who enjoys that which is not his property is a thief. You see, somebody wants to enjoy your wife, they're a rapist. Call the police. You see, so somebody who wants to enjoy that which is not their property, they're a thief. So, what does that mean? Since Krishna is the proprietor, he's also the rightful enjoyer, and if we try to enjoy what belongs to someone else, we are thieves, and a thief can never be happy. Why? Because he's always afraid of getting caught. Always looking this way and that way. He's always in anxiety, the thief, you see. The police are coming. You see. So we have a lot of work to do, ladies and gentlemen, Prabhus and Matajis. We have a lot of work to do right here in our hearts. We still hold on this false sense of proprietorship, false sense of enjoyment. The third item, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam, the best friend of all living entities. We have to realize Krishna is the best friend. It's a very important thing. Sometimes people think, well, why? It's a different thing. Some people say there is no God. God doesn't exist. Or they say there is God, but he's got a means. He has a mean side to him. You see, sometimes he has a bad hair day. You know, he does things that aren't very nice. You know, these are two false conceptions, that God is not all loving. He's not our best friend, or he doesn't exist at all. You see. So it's very important you understand there is a Supreme Person who's the source of all existence. He's the well-wishing friend. He's the best. He's the most intimate. You see, in Sanskrit, there's different words for friend. There's Mitra, Bandhu, and Suhrit. Frit, you know, means heart. So the one who is your very heart, he is your most intimate friend. So Krishna is just not a casual friend or a buddy, you see. A Mitra or a Bandhu. Krishna is Suhrit, he's your dearmost, most intimate friend. You see, Suhrit, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. So if we understand this, not only, it's really an amazing combination. He owns everything, he enjoys everything, but yet he's our intimate friend. He wouldn't have to have someone who owns everything and enjoys everything. What does he need me for? You see, you could say that. What am I needed? He doesn't have to be my friend. He can just ignore me. He's the owner and enjoyer of everything. He can have a great time without me. But yet, Krishna is not like that, you see. Actually, Krishna accepts every single jiva soul as the most dear child, his offspring. We're all the offspring of Krishna, you see. And every one of us is taken by Krishna as most dear, you see. As most dear, you see. This is why he personally comes, yada yada hi dharmasha, or he comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because we are actually very, very, we cannot imagine how dear each one of us is to Krishna. How much he wants us back. How much his heart is just intensely desiring that we come back to him. So if we can understand how much Krishna, or try to understand at least, how much Krishna actually loves us, how much he cares about us, how he's trying to do everything possible. He doesn't want to bring us back by force, like the police force, putting the handcuffs, you see. Some people say, well, why God allows us the free will to leave him? Why doesn't he just keep us in the spiritual world? Well, then we're just prisoners, you see. He wants us to be there because we want to be there, not that I'm forced to stay here with handcuffs, you see. He gives us that ability to love me or leave me, because unless you have that choice, you can't really love. Love cannot be forced. Love has to be voluntary. By its very nature, love has to be voluntary, you see. So Krishna gives us the choice. He remains our most intimate, well-wishing friend, no matter what we do, whether we love him or leave him, he's still our most intimate friend. In fact, he travels with us as the super soul. Even if we come to the material world, you see, he doesn't leave us alone. He travels with us in the paramatma within the heart. He never abandons us. He travels with us. Can you imagine how Krishna travels with us through all kinds of species? Do you have any friend that you're so dear to him that if he got convicted of a prison sentence, you'd go and sit in prison with him? Well, Krishna does that, you see. We're imprisoned in all these different bodies. And it's amazing that Prabhupada says our first birth is as Lord Brahma. Can you imagine? We were all Lord Brahma. That's what's stated. Sometimes devotees can't believe that, but it's stated by Prabhupada in his purport. So I accept it as true. You try being Brahma, you could go back to Godhead, but then you But you're still material desire, but you try something else. And finally you come down to become Indra. And you go all the way down to become Indragopa germ. You become a worm in stool. You become a pig. You become a monkey. You become an elephant. You become a snake. Krishna travels with you in every single species you enter into. He's so dear. He's such a dear friend that he travels with us through all these species of life as a super soul. Waiting for that opportunity that I can somehow attract this soul to come back to my service, you see. But the human form is the greatest opportunity. Because in the human form, you can actually reawaken that loving relationship with Krishna. So then, how do we apply this? Because we all have so many disturbances. I mean, every day each one of us faces disturbances. It could be our job, it could be school, it could be our health. It could be, you know, our economic situation. It could be with some problem with the neighbors. You know, there's so many. It's like there was a death today or yesterday. There's so many things that are just plaguing us, you see. So how do then we apply this knowledge? Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. How do we apply this knowledge to actually be blissful, always be peaceful in all situations? That's the question. We've talked about the theory, now let's talk about the practice. How do you actually do this in such a way you're never agitated, you're always blissing out in the mercy of Krishna? You're always swimming in an ocean of nectar at every minute. How do you do it? You see? The self-realized souls do that, you see. Those who are highly advanced in Krishna consciousness, they do that. But we neophytes, how can we get out of our neophyte position, come to that advanced stage like these great sages? You know what Prabhupada told me in one letter? He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. You see, that's the kind of consciousness we need to actually get out of the anxieties. We're directly experiencing Krishna at every minute. Not just in our bead bag or in the altar, but everywhere. We had an interesting class this morning in Toronto, reading about the Paramahamsas. The Paramahamsas are those who directly experience Krishna at every minute. They're always in perfect peace. It's interesting. They're the great swans. Why are they compared to swans, these Paramahamsas? It's described that a swan has an amazing ability with his beak. The swan can take a mixture of milk and water and he can extract the milk. We can't do that. If you give me a mixture of glass of, you know, milk and water, I can just drink the whole thing. I can't separate the water and the milk. I can't do that with my mouth. But the swan can. He has an amazing ability. He can take that mixture and just suck out the milk and leave the water sitting there. Can you imagine? That's the ability the swan has. So why are these great saints compared to swans? Well, I can tell you why. Here we are in the material world. Like it or not, here we are at Scarborough, Ontario, Canada, planet Earth, the universe of the four-headed Brahma, right? It's our address. Chaturmukhi and Jagat. That's our address. Here we are in the universe of the four-headed Brahma on the planet Earth in the country called Canada, a city called Scarborough. What's our situation? The material energy is all around. We're in the ocean of material energy right now. But you know what? Krishna is present. He's within every atom. He's between every... Krishna is omnipresent. There's nowhere where Krishna is not present. Krishna and his energy are non-different. Krishna is fully present in his energy, but what is the difficulty? We don't experience him. We only experience the material energy. But the Paramahamsa, he can take this material energy, which Krishna is within it. He can extract Krishna from Scarborough, Ontario, and leave aside the material energy. You see, that's the swan-like devotee, the Paramahamsa, you see. So how do us neophytes then get to the Paramahamsa stage? That's the question. As Baba told me, you just become qualified to see Krishna face to face. That's Paramahamsa stage. How do you get there? How do you get to that stage where you're experiencing perfect peace in all situations, whether it's birth, death, old age, disease, as they say, hell or high water. In all such situations, you're directly experiencing Krishna and relishing the sweet, intimate, loving relationships with Him in all kinds of varieties of tastes and experiences and communications. How do you come to that level? That's what we have to discuss today. How to come to that level. How to have peace in the midst of adversity. Well, I can tell you the insider secret if you're ready for it. For the Paramahamsa, the word adversity is scratched out of his dictionary. There's no such thing as adversity. Actually, it's just adversity is a state of mind. One who sees the loving hand of Krishna acting in every situation, he sees how in every situation I am being unlimitedly blessed by Krishna. There's no moment in all of my eternal existence, even in my vast sojourn of millions of billions of lives in this material existence, there was not even one nanosecond when I was not being unlimitedly blessed by Krishna. So adversity is really just a state of mind. It's not a fact. It's only a state of mind. There's no such thing as adversity, actually. The only adversity is when we forget Krishna, actually. That's the adversity. All these things happening externally to us, birth, death, old age, and disease, adi atma, adi bodhik, adi daivik, these are blessings, actually, to help us come back to that point of seeing Krishna blessing us at every minute. The pinches of the material nature to help us remember this place is not my home. I'm actually, by my very nature, I'm Jeevatma. The Jeevatma is full of bliss, full of knowledge, and eternal. We've said that a million times, haven't we? Satchitananda Vigraha. That is my actual nature. Where's my water? That's my actual nature, you see. To taste unlimited bliss at every minute. So that I'm not doing that means somehow or other I'm out of sync. It's like you have a light bulb and you have a fixture, but there's no light coming out of it. Why would that happen, you know? You have the fixture and the light bulb, just like an example. I'll show you a practical example. I have this flashlight for reading, you know, doing some reading if it's a little dark. Here's enough light. Sometimes there's not enough light to read the books. So the batteries were kind of flickering, you know. And before I came over, I said, but you said it takes three pen light batteries. I've got to put some new batteries in before I come over to Scarborough. So if I needed, I have, you know, good battery. So I put the batteries in, I turned it on, and nothing happened. What's going on? I took it out. Well, I had one battery in backwards. So that's our problem right now. We have one battery in backwards. Psychically, you see. We have a battery is in backwards. That's all. And therefore we're experiencing adversity. When you flip the battery around, then there's no adversity anymore. It's that simple. It's really that simple. You just got to turn the battery around. You see. What is the battery that's flipped around? I am this body. That's the battery that's flipped around backwards, you see. I'm male, I'm female, I'm 70 years old, I'm 17 years old, you see. I'm Indian, I'm American, I'm a Texan, or whatever it may be. The battery's backwards. You just got to flip it around. I'm not this body, I'm an eternal spiritual being, qualitatively one with Krishna. I'm his eternal servant. Just flip the battery around, there's no more difficulties, you see. If you have faith in the principle that Krishna loves you and he's the supreme controller, he's orchestrating everything simply to bring you back to his abode as soon as possible. If you have faith in this principle, your battery's properly situated again. And you will be enlightened. It's like the, now we got an enlightened flashlight. The light is there, you see. You will have that light of Krishna consciousness shining in your heart at every minute. And adversity won't touch you anymore. Even though it may appear to be adversity. It's like Kunti Devi. It appeared that she was going through so many adversities, isn't it? When they were, the Pandavas were in exile for 13 years. Can you imagine being a queen or a princess and having to live in the forest in fear of man-eating rakshasas? No comfortable palace bed. Can you imagine? And when it was all over, she said, may those adversities come again. Vipadarsham tatashatatatatatatatatat jagadguru. She said, may those adversities come again and again. Because when I see adversity, I can do nothing but see Krishna. And when I see Krishna, I no longer see birth and death. So for a Vaishnava, one who's actually become Paramahams, who sees everything in relation with Krishna, everything is a blessing. May those adversities come again and again and again and again and again, because they are the greatest blessing to enable me to directly experience Krishna at every minute. So we have the most revolutionary knowledge that has ever been taught in the history of the universe. You see, there's famous philosophies, you know, Freudism. It's just simply nonsense. Of course, there's some truth in it, Prabhupada said. Freud said that sex is the basis of everything in the material world. He's right, Prabhupada said. But there's no philosophies, you know, that teach you. It's like someone has a book called The Power of Now. You can become enlightened by the power of now. These are bogus things, you see, just concoctions. And this is the real knowledge that will actually liberate you from all adversity. You just have to tune in, turn on, and bliss out. Why miss out when you can bliss out, you see? By being Krishna conscious, by having full faith that Krishna loves you unlimitedly, and He's all-powerful, and He's orchestrating everything for you at every minute to bring you back to Him ASAP. You see? If you have faith in this principle and you act in terms of Krishna's instructions given in the Gita, your life will be one blissful celebration. Every day will become more ecstatic. Every day you'll wake up with a bigger smile on your face than the smile you had the day before. You see? So we want to make this knowledge available to everyone. This is our mission. We want to bring world peace. We have a world peace mission. The world is suffering now, greatly suffering. It's just horrible what's going on. Starvation, terrorism, it's just, you know, economic stranglehold. You have to work like a dog just to have a place to sleep and a little food to eat. I mean, it's crazy what's going on all over the world. Crazy. It's mad. It's a madhouse. Actually, when I was a kid, there was a movie. It was a popular movie back in about 1957 or something. It was called "It's a Mad, 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 Mad World." Really a good title. It is a mad, 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 mad world. It's a crazy place because they have forgotten the central principle. They've forgotten that Krishna is the owner. We have no objection. They can't say Allah or Christ or Jehovah. The name is not the issue, the principle. There is a supreme controller, supreme proprietor of everything. And we have to acknowledge that He's the true owner and everything is for His pleasure and satisfaction. You can do that as a Muslim, as a Christian, as a Jew, as a Hindu. Doesn't matter what group you want to align with, but we have to teach this basic principle. Because if this principle is accepted, we can have world peace. So personally, I'm trying to do that. I was previously before I came, I was a singer-songwriter with a little bit of popularity. So I thought, why not use that talent I had to introduce this knowledge to the music lovers of the world. So you can bring that guitar. So I wrote one song called The Peace Formula based on this verse of the Bhagavad Gita. I sent the lyrics to one gentleman whose name was Barack Obama. He had a big position. He's president of the United States. Yeah. I sent these lyrics off to the president of the United States. He wrote me back. Let me read you what he wrote me back. He really liked the song a lot. Here's what he said. Let's see, where is that? It's in my email. Yeah. Oh yeah. Said, this is a letter from the White House on Christmas Eve, actually, wrote me. Christmas Eve on 2014 from the White House. President Obama wrote me, thank you for writing. Messages like yours serve as an important reminder of the work that still lies ahead, and they reflect a commitment to staying engaged in shaping the future as we know is possible. As long as I'm president, I'll keep pouring everything I have into securing a brighter tomorrow for people across our country. Now, and again, thank you for writing. By embracing hope and speaking out on issues that matter to you, you can help make a difference. I want you to know I'm listening, and I wish you all the best. Sincerely, Barack Obama. Now, and in the third verse, I said, listen here, all of you world leaders. There's one thing you must understand. There's a supreme proprietor who owns everything. What you think is yours is slipping through your hands. He replied to that. He said, I want you to know I am listening. I said, listen here, all you world leaders. And he said, I want you to know I am listening. So it was very encouraging. So I have to have you can't just bring the guitar. You have to bring my paraphernalia. Let's see, the pick. Okay, good. Yeah, all right, we're all set. So I want to be clear off this stuff here. I need the other mic now. Two mics. Give me a little water here. Get that throat lubricated. Yeah. Okay. Do we have another mic stand? All right. Now, after I sing it for you, I'm going to play you the recording. It's interesting. On the recorded version, there's a number of people coming in on the chorus. You might think, well, Sankarshan got a bunch of devotees to sing in the chorus. Right? You think, well, people must. But guess who's singing on the chorus? You ever heard of the Baptist Church? A bunch of Baptists, Christian Baptists, are singing on the chorus for this song. So this shows you it's actually a universal message. It's not just... Even Christians can appreciate this, you see. Become an unspeakable nightmare. Peace is destroyed, replaced by brutal warfare. All hell is breaking loose on this planet right now, and for stopping it, the leaders have no idea how. But here is the peace formula. Please take it, my friends. Please take it. You'll see we'll not fail. Here is the peace formula, please take it, my friends, please take it. Surely peace will prevail. We come into this world possessing nothing, and we leave from this world with absolutely nothing. But in the middle we fight and kill, claiming this is mine, neglecting the real owner who reclaims everything in time. Yes, here is the peace formula. Please take it, my friend. Please take it. You'll see it will not fail. Here is the peace formula. Please take it, my friends. Please take it. Surely peace will prevail. Now listen here, all of you world leaders. If you want real peace, this you must now understand. There's a supreme proprietor to whom everything belongs. What you think is yours is just now slipping through your hands. Acknowledge that supreme owner, enjoyer and friend. Peace will come and this turmoil will completely end. Yes, here is the peace formula. Please take it, my friends. Please take it. You'll see it will not fail. Here is the peace formula. Please take it, my friends. Please take it. Surely peace will prevail. Please take it. Worldwide peace will prevail. Please take it, please take it, please take it. Now I'll let you hear this, the recording, so you can hear how the Baptists, how they're singing along with great, they really do a good job. I figure if the Baptists can sing along, we can probably attract the whole world. That's the way I look at it. Let me play that for you. So you got it right here. Flip over here to playlists. The album is called Oh Sweet Lord. We have it available. Anybody who takes a book, you get a free download card of the whole CD. Today you can get that. So you can take it home and listen to it. Yeah, here we go. I'll let you hear a little bit of it at least. Here's the Baptist. Come in now. So, so that's pretty encouraging. The song is playing now, and a radio station, a FM station in the UK, picked it up and played it on the air in Britain. I have stations all over the U.S. now playing my songs too. I have fans all over the world. Carmi music fans are getting into it. I'm becoming popular on the internet now with the Carmis through music. So I figured, well, why not find different ways to preach, you know. But it's very encouraging. I have hundreds of fans right now. People say, yes, I'm a fan of this Sankarshan Das. So we're... we have to find different ways, you know. Prabhupada talks about novel ways to spread Krishna consciousness. So this book distribution, yeah.
This formula was very famous before even recording. It was very famous in Israel. People from Israel remember them just when you recorded in closet and put it on the...
Israel also. My closet recording was popular in Israel. My first recording was in a closet. Then I went to the studio to do a better one when I got the Baptists to sing along. Even my closet recording was very much appreciated, the singing in the closet. So in this way, we really have to dedicate ourselves to bringing world peace. And this, there's no way you can do it without Krishna consciousness. You see, we have the only tangible solution. I'm just praying for that day the United Nations will invite me to sing the peace poem at the UN building. I'm hoping for that day. In fact, I should write them and ask them if I can come. Tell them I have the formula. I'm going to do that now. I just thought of it. I didn't think of it till now. But now here with all of you, I'm inspired. I should write the... If Obama liked it, maybe the UN would like it. I can go to New York and sing it for the whole UN. That'd be a fantastic idea. Maybe I get the Baptists to come with me. That'd be even better. So anyway, we have about 10 minutes left on session number one, so now we can have some questions and answers. And I'll do another song in session number two, by the way. A song based on a poem by Rupa Goswami, which I think you all will like. You can sing along on that one. It has a kirtan at the end. So now let's go and see what questions we might have. Any questions? You have to take the capo off before you put it inside. Otherwise it won't fit. Questions, questions, questions. Here we go. What was the largest obstacle in your devotional life? Not wanting to become initiated. Because there I was, a singer-songwriter, and I was attracted to Krishna consciousness. And I thought, well, I'll just write Krishna conscious songs. Actually, George Harrison had just come out with My Sweet Lord. It was a million sellers. So I thought, well, I'll just be like George Harrison, you know. I won't become initiated. I'll just be a singer-songwriter. So that was my biggest obstacle. I didn't want to get initiated. But I moved into the ashram so I could learn how to write better songs. That was the idea. Write better songs. I brought my guitar and everything. I told Vishnu John Swami, I just came as a learning experience. I didn't say I'd come to surrender. I'd come to see what I can learn. He said, oh, very good attitude, he said. So... how did I overcome that obstacle of not wanting to be initiated? Just wanted to be a singer-songwriter for Krishna, not a disciple. How did I overcome that obstacle? It's quite interesting. One day we're out on Harinam, and some radio DJ handed us a LP, a 33 1/3 record. It's called the Radha Krishna Temple Album. He thought it was too spiritual to play on the radio. He said, here you, those Hare Krishna guys, they probably like this, let me give it to them. And boy, did we love it. We didn't know that George Harrison had produced this album. There's a nice cut we sing every morning now. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham. That's the first cut on the LP. The second cut was, Samsaradava Nalalita Loka Tranaya karyunya ganaganadvam praptashakalyana gunanavasya Vande Guru Shri Charanaravindam. So my service was to vacuum the temple room rug every day. And I was hearing that second cut, Samsara Dhavanana Liloka, while I was vacuuming the rug. And I was just absolutely, the word thunderstruck, the very good word in English. I was thunderstruck by the mood of the devotees. I was going like, they have, you know, a eureka experience, they call it, you know. I was going, wow. They are feeling something that I don't feel. They've given their lives to Prabhupada, you see. They are feeling something that I don't feel. I'm looking the outside of the honey jar trying to get some honey. They got their tongues in the honey jar. I'm not tasting what they're tasting. So being an envious person by nature, you know, I'm actually a very envious person, to be honest. So envy brought me to this movement, actually. I was envious of what they were tasting. They were tasting nectar that I was not tasting by being a disciple, and I was just a singer-songwriter wanting to write songs about Krishna consciousness, you see. I realized they are tasting something that I'm not. And so at that moment, this thought just completely overpowered my consciousness. I had tears streaming down my face while I was vacuuming the rug, crying while I was vacuuming the rug, you know. And it just, this is what the thought that took over my brain. Wouldn't it be beautiful if I gave my life to Prabhupada? That was it. When can I get initiated? You see. So that was my biggest obstacle. I didn't want to be initiated. I just wanted to be a, you know, quote, what we now call, we call it congregation members now. We didn't have that term in those days. The common term now is ISKCON. Krishna is absolute. What does that mean? That means many, many things. Describe the absolute nature of Krishna includes many, 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 many things. Krishna knows everything. Krishna is the power behind everything. Nothing exists outside of Krishna, actually. Everything that exists exists within Krishna because Krishna is absolute. You can't escape Krishna. We're within Krishna right now. Everything is his expanded energy. There's two things in existence. There's Krishna and the energy of Krishna. Beyond that, there's nothing else that exists. And the energy of Krishna is non-different from Krishna. It's different and non-different simultaneously. So that's some of the things about his absoluteness we can discuss. What was the most satisfying achievement in your devotional life? Well, they keep getting more and more satisfying every day. Actually, my most satisfying achievement is to be here now with you right now. My achievements are just every day I achieve something that's more satisfying than the previous day, you see. So my most satisfying achievement is to be right here with you right now. This is the most satisfying achievement in my whole life. That's the way Krishna consciousness is. It's ever increasingly satisfying. When you actually tune into the spiritual platform, you say, kick out all the lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, the illusion, the envy, the craziness, the laziness, just kick it out with boot. When you take that kind of determination with your consciousness, you every day becomes the most satisfying experience you could ever imagine. And then the next day becomes even more satisfying. I mean, that's how it works. It's ever increasingly nectarian when you actually tune into the process. Bhagavan clearly said in the Bhagavad Gita that one should pursue their own path, no matter how inferior it is, and should not try to follow another's path, even if it's superior, which means one should follow a path suited to him or her based on his own nature and maturity. Other paths may be indigestible, confusing, and may cause conflict. We cannot force everyone to take same feed or same something. In this context, how can we say the path of bhakti is alone savior in Kali Yuga? What this means is, you take, just for example, somebody is a brahmachari and somebody is a householder, you see. And the wife of the husband is very disturbed. She's flipped out. She's totally flipping out over something. So it's not for the brahmachari to go and have an intimate meeting with her. It's for the husband to do that, you see. That's an example. He may think, well, I'm more Krishna conscious than her husband is, so I'm better qualified than he is to counsel her because I'm more Krishna. Maybe it's a new couple, you see, and the brahmachari has been around for 10 years practicing, and there's a new householder couple. But still, it's not that the brahmachari should enter into a confidential, private conversation with that woman, you see. He can talk to the husband. He can help the husband to guide his wife, but he should not take that role of being the husband. You see, that's not proper. You see, that will cause disturbance in the social order. That's what it's talking about. But bhakti is the original nature of every seemingly living entity. It's not that some have a bhakti nature and some don't. Everyone in their original pure consciousness is a pure devotee of Krishna. Jivara Sarupa Hai Krishnera Nichadas. The constitutional position of every single living entity is he's the eternal servant of Krishna. Everyone has that nature. So to connect someone with that nature, that is the perfection of their existence. Even if we try to understand and realize that we are not this body, everything around us is forcing us to come to bodily consciousness. No, not everything. Not if you're a part of ISKCON. Not if you're a disciple of a bona fide spiritual master. It's not that everything is... You have the other influence there, the spiritual influence. Not everything. You can say many things, but not everything. Prabhupada's books... your spiritual master, the association of devotees, these things are to pull you out of bodily consciousness. Like this center here, ISKCON Scarborough, this is to pull you out of bodily consciousness.
Okay,
please, I should be sharing these with you. Sorry, I got...
consciousness will pull us out, but if you remain on bodily platform, whether you are in ISKCON or anywhere, then it's impossible to get out of your bodily consciousness. One has to pull out oneself.
Please elaborate. I forgot to give some of these to you. But no, please elaborate. Go ahead.
Just like I came in here, somebody asked me if I'm from Fiji. This is a bodily conscious. But if you want to remain in bodily conscious, we will ask that thing. Rather, we should say, how is it? There is a statement in Bhagavatam where it says that when you go to a king or a wealthy man, you ask him how his business is going on. Not that you ask how are you doing. So when you go to the devotee, you don't ask where are you coming from, Fiji? Or I am coming from this?
That's a good point.
You're going to be remaining on bodily conscious.
Are you coming from Texas?
So it depends on even in Krishna consciousness. When we come, we want to remain on bodily platform. We will, and just like when the Indians get together, they wouldn't care for some Westerner there, and they will talk in their own language. It may be easy for them, but leaving that person alone, so he feels like a stranger in a strange land. So we have to be conscious about these things.
Give one to her now. I'd like to share it with her. It's nice. And we have another mic. Take the mic over for her so they can hear you.
There's not many.
Well, let me finish answering this one, and then you take over that one, because there's a little bit more here. At any point of time, place, and circumstances, it is something pounding us with the impression of I, me, and mine. It is like forcibly imposing on our what is the easy way or best way to put this out of our head. So yeah, we just have to. You need to take initiation of the bona fide spiritual master who's committed to getting you out of this consciousness. Then you have to be fully surrendered to him. You have to chant your rounds. You have to follow the principles. You have to read Prabhupada's books. You have to associate with devotees. These things will pull you out of this whirlpool of bodily consciousness. Okay, go ahead.
The question is, what is the importance of academic learning? Do you think if someone is fully engaged in spirituality, he may lose his interest in academic learning? And if he loses his interest in other learning, is it good for our society? Krishna has given four varnas and four ashrams. Like in our body, we have head, we have hands, we have belly, we have legs. And every part of the body has a different function. So academic education is very good if it's used in Krishna consciousness. If it is only for maintaining body, then it is not good. So if it's used, just like in India, we have many in our movement, we have many doctors, but they are also engaged in Krishna consciousness. It is very good. It's very laudable. So they can use their. Otherwise, just it's for sense gratification. It's useless. It's a fact. Okay?
Any other questions? If not, we can end session number one. And what time will we start session number two?
15 minutes.
15 minutes. That means all the Brahmins can chant their noon Gayatris. And we can so we'll adjourn now and come back at 12:15.
If you want to add anything.
Let me add a few more points, and then we'll wrap it up. Yeah. Okay. So, academic learning, yeah, is it? You can use academic learning in Krishna's service. Just like, for example, I do Krishna conscious writing every day, and sometimes I look up in the dictionary, you know, new words. That's academic learning, learning new English words, you see. But you're using it for Krishna, then it's good. You see? It's like I was looking up a word, dazzlingly. It's even hard to pronounce, dazzlingly. It's a cool word, you see. Dazzlingly. Dazzle is one word. Dazzlingly. Another is, it's academics, but I'm using it for Krishna. How we can use that cool word dazzlingly in Krishna's service. So you can use academics in Krishna's service. How to write more power, use language more powerfully, you see. Or sometimes we have to make mathematical calculations. You know, we require mathematics to do that, the art of mathematics. So you can use these things in Krishna's service. Huh? What is it?
What's
that?
iPhones and all those kind of thing for calculating. They don't do it in their brains like you previously.
Ah. Okay, so and if one loses interest in other learnings, is it good for our society? Actually, the Vedic study is in one field of academics. Vedic study is the topmost field of academics. So it's not that you're non-academic if you just read Prabhupada's books. Now you've gone to the top field. You've gone post-PhD level of academics. You're the most highly educated academic when you master Prabhupada's books. Now that you've abandoned academics, you've gone to the highest level of academics by reading Prabhupada's books. Ki jai.